Hi, and welcome to our Insider Chat here. It's Mike Seymour, joined as I am for these Insider podcasts by Ian Fales. How are you, Ian?
Good, Mike. How are you going?
So I'm back. I was in with, of course, John and Jeff in LA at the convention of SIDGRAPH and a couple of other things, of course, filming for FX PhD's background fundamentals. But now I'm back. How have you been?
Oh, really well. Had a pretty couple busy weeks, even though you guys were off at SIDGRAPH. There's always stuff going on while that conference is on, and there were films coming out, some big ones that actually didn't do very well.
Well, of course, normally on Insider, you and I chat about films, and we will do that, of course, this week, but we'll also probably dip a little bit into what happened at SIDGRAPH. But what films are you referring to that were big that came out that didn't go well?
Well, Fantastic Four. That's right. The big
Not
one.
Not so fantastic.
Just didn't work story-wise. Had a lot of backstory about the director and problems on set that I think a lot of people knew about going into the film.
Well, especially once the director actually, you know, apologized for the film before it came out, which must be almost unprecedented.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that, actually, because I happened to catch some B-roll of the film that got leaked. I don't know whether it got leaked or whether it was actually B-roll. And there's a whole lot of, you know, behind-the-scenes footage in there of the actors, you know, on a green screen set with various things that definitely weren't in the final film, like the Fantastic Car. It's probably got a better name than that.
There's a Fantastic Car?
Well, I think in the comics, they fly in a Fantastic Car.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's in there in the B-roll. So, obviously, a lot of things did get reshot or done again because there were whole scenes missing. And, you know, that's one of the problems with the film is that it did feel a little bit like it was missing something, or it jumped to things, or the ending was quick, or... I mean, I could go on about a few of the film's problems. I didn't mind the visual effects. I thought they were pretty good, but as a film, it didn't hold together very well.
Right. Well, as we were talking, I looked up what you were referring to, and sure enough, the Fantastic Four's flying car. I can see exactly what you're referring to. Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess that's a thing, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, part of the other problem that people had with the film was that it's called the Fantastic Four, and obviously there was an attempt to make the film more about the characters, more about their humanity, because, in fact, you don't see them with their superpowers till, like, I'm going to say three-quarters of the way through the film, but maybe it's halfway.
Right.
And that, you know, that's pretty bold for a superhero film to not show them as, you know, the stretchy, invisible rock and fire characters. So that didn't quite work for me either.
Right. Well, we probably won't be doing a VFX show on it. So what would you rate the visual effects stuff from MPC as?
Well, MPC, they were behind Ben, the rock character, and I'm blanking, or it's the Thing, and they're also behind a bunch of the environments.
Yeah, especially when they go to the alternate reality.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yep. Yeah. The Thing was great. It looked good. It sat in the environment quite well.
I think there are a few inconsistencies. I don't think the rock remained constantly the same height throughout performances. There, I don't think it was... Yeah, not really. No. Hey, okay, so what else didn't go well or did go well since I saw you last?
Well, I did see The Man from U.N.C.L.E. last week. I enjoyed it. It didn't do very well, mainly because there was another film out the same weekend called Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
Which has gone gangbusters.
Well,
and,
yeah.
You know, hits the spot.
You know, we were at the premiere. Well, not attending it, but it happened right where we were at SIDGRAPH.
Yeah, right.
So they, you know, locked off streets, a lot of police, a lot of people attending. So, yeah, no, it was huge. I was in LA, and that film obviously resonates very much with an LA kind of audience. And, man, was it popular. I was almost unaware of Man from U.N.C.L.E. opening. It was so dominating.
Yeah, which is a shame because I think it could have been a bigger film, Man from U.N.C.L.E., just if it had a standalone weekend. And I'm a big fan of Armie Hammer and Alicia Vikander too. She was in that film Ex Machina, and that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
But it, you know, it's a bit of a spy
but also
thriller.
It's Guy Ritchie, so
it's Guy Ritchie.
Guy Ritchie's a good director.
Yeah, it had some sort of a few sort of things in the film that I don't think work that well. There's sort of a suddenly the editing style changes about halfway through.
You also thought it was a bit slow, didn't you?
That's what I was going to say. For a spy thriller, I thought you kind of were waiting for sort of a big reveal, and I think most people had guessed what it would be by the ending. But despite all that, I thought the visual effects were pretty good. And, you know, there's a lot of environment work there that we'll eventually be able to cover on FX Guide. There's a embargo right now. But I think Rise, Cinecide and Blue Bolt did a great job on the environment effects.
Yeah, I guess films that have done really well lately are things like Trainwreck and, you know, a few things like that. I'm interested to know whether or not some of the other films that are in this sort of less effects end of the summer, like Ricky and the Flash and that kind of stuff, Hitman will go very well. They're kind of late out, if you know what I mean. But Inside Out went very, very well. In fact, better than I thought it would.
Inside Out, oh yeah. It was the most surprising movie of the summer for me in terms of being a hit, because I didn't think Pixar would be able to, you know, roar home like that. But they really hit a nerve, didn't they, with sort of the emotion.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen I think we posted on FX Guide the trailer thing for the short that will be coming out on the DVD?
Yeah, Riley's First Date.
Yeah,
that's fun, isn't it? I like these shorts. I mean, Pixar's always done them, but there's really a real thing behind the shorts now that Walt Disney Animation and also Pixar are doing. Plus, you know, stuff from Blue Sky and elsewhere. It sort of adds to the environment of the films in a way, you know, and they're even releasing them more on DVD now too.
So as we've touched on that, what do we think about the rollout of stuff at D23? So there's like a lot of stuff discussed at D23. There was gaming stuff with Battlefront. There was obviously a lot of stuff to do with Pixar, because we had the announcement of not only Good Dinosaur stuff and things that we were expecting, like Finding Dory, which I saw a minute of, and in SidGraph. But, you know, there was Cars 3, I'm going to say, The Incredibles 2, and I'm going to think there's another one, the Mexican one that's going to have their first Latino lead.
Is that Coco?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And there was one other that was announced.
Well, Toy Story 4.
Toy Story 4, of course, yeah.
Yep.
But that would already been announced. But yes, so had some of the others, I guess. Yeah, so that was all pretty interesting. And then a Star Wars part to the theme parks, and a lot of stuff over the upcoming Star Wars films. Disney, between all of that, and then Pirates of the Caribbean and Marvel stuff, is really sort of dominating, isn't it? Like, in franchises.
They are, and It's amazing, because there isn't a property in there that I'm not excited about.
Including
honestly.
The Muppets coming back to television.
Including
we know you're a secret Muppets fan.
Did you watch? There's a 10-minute reel of the Muppets. It's the pitch reel, I think, to ABC or whichever network is broadcasting it.
Right.
And it is hilarious, because it's in the style of The Office. So they talk to camera, or I think Kermit talks to camera.
Well, now, of course, one of the creative force behind it's from Big Bang Theory, right?
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think they're really kicking it in terms of... but, I mean, if you think of Disney Corporation, ESPN, Marvel, Pixar, the theme parks, ABC Network...
Lucasfilm,
Star Wars, and then, you know... I think that the area that they don't dominate in yet is games. But they had a big hit with that one with the characters.
Disney Infinity.
Yeah, Infinity was a bigger hit than they thought it was going to be, I think. And certainly I got the impression from talking to games people at SidGraph that, you know, no disrespect to it, but they just thought that Disney underestimated how popular that was going to be.
Yeah, I've got some young cousins who, in England, and when I was there last, they showed me all their Disney Infinity characters. And it's just mind-blowing how they'll play it on the... wherever, you know, the Nintendo or... And then they'll play it with the actual characters separately with no game machines turned on. I mean, that is a big deal that they're so into it like that.
So I'm looking forward to Battlefront. I think Battlefront will be a really interesting game for them. Now, I'm going to say is Battlefront an EA game? I think it is, isn't it? Yeah, EA. And then there's also Battlepod something or other that they announced as well, I think.
Yeah, they've shown some nice stuff from Battlefront, especially the Hoth sequence. That's one I love. And then I'm not sure if I saw it with Battlefront, but maybe elsewhere, is the speeder bike chase through Endor.
Right.
I mean, that's literally my favorite sequence from any of the Star Wars films in Return of the Jedi. So, I mean, I don't have a gaming console, but I will somehow play that game, you know, just to experience it.
Well, my friend, I do have gaming consoles. I have several gaming consoles. You can come over and have a barbecue, and I'll pitch you against my ace daughters, who are really good with consoles. But, I mean, I think also the theme parks, you know, having this huge expansion with the Star Wars franchise into the theme parks will... But, you know, they've just got such a long planning horizon right now.
They do, and I mean, I think there's also Avatar, right?
Is that a Disney property?
Well, I don't know. It's not a Disney property, is it? But
I thought it was Fox.
It's certainly a Fox property, but it's being developed as a world, I'm quite sure, in one of the Disney worlds. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so James Cameron has shown a bit of the concept models and whatnot before, but then also they ran a video of John Landau, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name properly, where he sort of introduced himself as someone, and it's like Alpha Centauri Productions, and they had these kids talking about how much they love the world. It was a really peculiar video, but I think helps give the sense of what Avatar World is going to be.
Yeah, no, Disney announced, I completely missed this, right, that they were going to actually convert Florida's Animal Kingdom section of it into Avatar-based Pandora. Well, that'll be interesting. Not that I get to Florida that often, but at night the whole thing's going to go bioluminescent. That'll be pretty funky.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, again, to say that superlative, it's amazing what's out there already in terms of theme parks, but what's coming. I mean, I don't know if any of people you've talked to went to the Fast and Furious Supercharged ride as well.
Well, the guys, our crew, our posse, as it were, we're going to go on Friday. I flew out on Thursday night. So I was giving two panels, one on games convergence with film, one on the state of the industry. We did five major interviews with visual effects supervisors, which was just awesome, which will be the back half of this term's background fundamentals courses over at FX PhD. And yeah, that was... That, but the thing is, like, that's quite a lot of work. Then I was also doing other interviews, stuff to do with VR, and a bunch of other stuff. So by the time I got to Thursday night, I was done, man. I was just completely done. But I was really glad to get these interviews. We had Paul Franklin, Chris Edwards from Third Floor. Obviously, Paul's from Double Negative. Alex Henning from Magnopus. And Magnopus, he obviously won an Academy Award for his work on Hugo, but heck of a nice guy, and currently helping us in our VR course this term. And then we had Sheldon from MPC. We're talking about Arnold. That was a big gag, the big technical gag of the show, in my opinion.
What's that?
Well, Per Christensen said, putting up a picture from the last Terminator film, going, you know, this is Arnold. This is Arnold rendered in RenderMan. sorry. And then now we have Sheena from... well, she does a lot of stuff. We've obviously had her on FX Guy before, but Sheena is the supervisor on Agents... No, I was going to say Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's actually Agent Carter, which is, of course, the other television property of the Marvel Universe. And they're just starting their second series. I can't talk about it, but great to have her on. Because as I was saying to John this morning, we don't have enough women in visual effects, so we really needed to make sure that there was a senior female supervisor that could join us this... this term, and of course, we're super glad to have Sheena there. Sheena's done tons of work also with Ridley Scott and a bunch of others who just happen to be doing television at the moment. But yeah, so I was just, Thursday night, man, I was just dead. I got on the plane and I like just slept to Sydney.
Yeah.
No sleep till Brooklyn. But I was just out, man.
What was the best thing you saw at SIGGRAPH, do you think?
That's a really hard question to answer. I will say that there are a couple of technologies that I saw that were really, really significant in the VR space. One of them was actually 8i. 8i has a... it is a light field, but when I say that, it implies the wrong thing. It's a bunch of cameras that film an actor presenting and as such can virtualize the performance such a way that you're effectively playing it back from any camera angle. So it is light field stuff, but it's done with a sort of like a point cloud solution. It doesn't look like it, but it does. I found that to be absolutely compelling because it's allowing a really good performance. And, you know, my big thing, my big criticism of VR is that everyone's showing these really great kind of, you know, well, here we are standing on the edge of a tropical rainforest. And we go, hmm? And what happens? No, no, look around, look around. Okay. And anything happen? No, 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 but just doesn't it feel like you're there? Yeah, but I'd like something to happen. I'd like something to happen with people. I'd like a story.
Yeah, no movement.
Whereas the AI thing was immediately somebody talking about, well, that basically it was a woman trying to address a message to her baby, which was in her arms, that was like maybe 3 or 4 months old. And she just starts choking up, trying to articulate what she wants to say to an older version of her daughter as she looks down into her daughter. And it's so genuine. It's so emotionally demanding. It's just extraordinary, the power that it has. And so I found that to be really good because, you know, as I say, that's what I found missing. At a technical level, there was a bunch of other stuff that was like really, really good. And obviously a range of other VR stuff. One of the things that I liked last year was OTOY. And OTOY had, again, a really, really impressive demo. The thing is, it was off booth, or it was on the booth, but in a private room. We were the second people in. The first people were the company that provided the prototype hardware that it was running on. And it was amazing. And the word got out so quickly that we're actually in the session. And we like the OTOY guys, and they're good friends, and they're really, really bright people. But they had to laugh. They said, like, while we've been in here, somebody's been texting us, a studio executive who's demanding to come in. And they're outside. And we're like, okay. And we actually knew who that was. But, that was really good. But the other end of the spectrum, away from the technology, I really enjoyed seeing some stuff at Pixar, just because it was good. They're good friends. They do really good work. So that was good.
Oh, they had not only, I mean, I think you mean the user group, but not also they just had so many presentations, didn't they? On Inside Out mostly, I guess. And then what I also saw online was just these queues for the user group.
The queue was unbelievable. Luckily, we got to jump the queue. But it was insane. But, you know, there were other things that were really, really good. I enjoyed DigiPro. There were some really good talks at DigiPro. I really enjoyed hanging out with the gamers. So I did two things that were very, very game-oriented. One was this panel, which had terrific people there from, like, Crytek and EA and Coalition and also Epic Games, Kim. So, like, really good people. I also had some dinners with that crowd, with another crowd, with Autodesk and a bunch of senior games developers, talking about Stingray and the stuff that, but also just their development process. Because one of the things I'm getting really into at the moment is stuff to do with development, stuff to do with scheduling, stuff to do with project management and how to run stuff.
Right.
So a lot of the stuff to do with Shotgun, but also to do with agile software development, a bunch of geeky stuff like that. Because I think being able to make this stuff is really important. And as you'd know, I do a bunch of business stuff. So the panel, the other one I was on was a panel with Barry from Volusion, Alex again from Magnopus, and Shannon Gaines from New Deal Studios discussing the future of the business. And I just feel like that's one of the things that FX Guide and FX PhD can do, is we can cover not just the cool tech, not just the big blockbuster film, but also some of the, I guess I'd call them management issues. I don't know what you'd call them, really.
Yeah. Well, it's good that SIGGRAPH has all those sorts of things, doesn't it? Because you don't just want to immerse yourself in tech. You want to see what the state of the business is, too. I was going to say another big thing that looked like it was a really popular event at SIGGRAPH was ILM's 40th celebration.
Why, yes, it was.
And also them showing off a bit of their ILM XLab stuff, which we did see at FMX and also at ILM, but it really has made people stand up and look at ILM, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Ben Snow hosted a terrific panel with Scott Farrar, Dennis Muren, Glenn McIntosh, Tim Alexander, Rob Bredow. Rob was also on my games panel. And they're really nice guys. And I got spoilt rotten because they asked me to come and take some photos for them, so it's always fun. It's also stressful. Like, you know, you've got someone like Dennis Muren, more Academy Awards than any other man living or woman living. And you're like taking the photo, you think, oh, if this doesn't come out,
sure, it's in focus.
I'm so sunk. But yeah, no, that was great. And then I really enjoyed the panel. And you're right, showing that that video was like really, really good. So yeah.
It's interesting. I saw a few comments online. People get really excited about what Rob was showing, you know, and a lot of it on the iPad and being able to control stormtroopers yep. and things in real time. And, you know, it's funny, a lot of the stuff online is, when can we play with this? When will it be available? You know, and it's not clear. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what it is. It's a tool to help filmmakers. It's a tool in the gaming world. It's a tool in VR.
It's sort not, of a bit of everything. Yeah, it's not actually meant to be a product. It's meant to be a technology showing. And the idea being that what could you do if you separated the rendering from the display? So the iPad itself just doesn't do anything other than just show you what's happening theoretically on the cloud. And so in reality, what you've got is a situation where you're experiencing a story. And so the IP, if you like, of it is, okay, well, I'm rendering on the cloud and just seeing it on the iPad, and everywhere I move around on the iPad, I can see different parts of the world. But the other part of the IP is this idea, well, it's not a game, and it's not a stand on the end of a cliff and just look around and say, isn't it beautiful? It's have a director give you a narrative story, but then you experience it either from the point of view of one of the characters, the point of view that the director wants you to do it, or by exploring and watching it, you know, from maybe around a corner or following a couple of other characters who are going to interact with that story. So it's not an autonomous world where people are just aimlessly walking around and you just bump into them and then ask them, who are you? There is, you know, stormtroopers trying to get droids. They're trying to escape. That's all playing out. But in the director's version, you don't see Leia giving the droids a message. But if you explore the same story again, you can do that. But you could watch the whole thing from one of the... what are the walkers called? Oh, my God, I'm going to get shot for this. You know, the big walkers?
AT-ATs, I think.
Yeah, whatever they are. Yeah. So you can watch it from inside that. You can watch it from inside a TIE fighter. So, like, there's a bunch of ways that you can experience this. And in addition to all that, you could do the same thing again I just described, instead of watching it on an iPad, in a VR helmet. So I think ILM's exploring it as a new thing. It's not quite a game. It's not quite a film. And that's really, really interesting. And then they're saying, oh, by the way, now we've got all this tech working, it could be a good filmmaker tool.
Yeah. No, exactly. I like that it's still experimental. That's the whole point, obviously.
Yeah. And so you have to experience it. Now, this is like a scene set up for this purpose, and I had great fun teasing Rob that from the panel that this was, in fact, the beginning of the next episode 7 or whatever it is. But he was like, no, it's not, and that's a really good way to get me fired. but, you know, here's the question. If you were watching a episode 7 in the cinema, that's great, and then it came out on, quote, DVD, but it wasn't a DVD. It was a virtualized experience. Mm. You could rewatch the film, but now do it from... I mean, how compelling would that be? Wouldn't that be every bit as compelling as the DVD revolution? Like, couldn't it open up a Disney to just cause me to want to rebuy the film that I've seen? Because I could download it, obviously, but I couldn't pirate it. Not that I do pirate films, I swear to God I don't, but I couldn't pirate the experience because the experience is an interactive, albeit still narrative storytelling process. So if you think of it from a business point of view, this has like some really interesting things. It's a huge secondary revenue source. It's an uncopyable, unpiratable second revenue source. And of course, it would be something that would be happening live. So you'd have a lot of data tracking on who was doing it, their credit card, everything about them.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense, obviously, to replace the revenue loss from DVDs. Mm. And also, the whole point is that they're making so many assets, you know, when they make the film or they make the game, that they can reuse them. I mean, that is the other benefit, obviously.
But let's not kid ourselves, guys. This is way off from being a product because, as I said in the games panel, it's no accident that every character in that either has a helmet on, is a robot, or is shown as a hologram, you know, on top of a drum being light projected. There are no actors with their faces in this
demo. No hair sims yet.
No body sims. So if you were to do a Star Wars, as long as you only had droids, stormtroopers, and rope, and the odd appearance as a hologram, you'd be fine. But that's not what's going to be, right? So what I outlined just a moment ago sounds really cool. Like, sounds like a brilliant revenue stream. But we, you know, a decade, I don't know, we're some huge number of years off being able to do that.
I hope we're not, but I think you're right. Except that we've all seen some pretty incredible stuff in terms of real-time rendering. You know, not just from Lucasfilm, but from like the Unreal guys and elsewhere. So who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's a trivial problem, isn't it? Because and also it's a weird problem. We were discussing this on the games panel again. So you've got these guys that are producing spectacularly good work. I don't know, ILM, whoever, Weta, and they're rendering like 24 hours a frame. And then you've got the games guys rendering these amazingly cool things at 24 milliseconds a frame. And so you basically got to keep the game under 50 milliseconds, and you've got to keep the renders under 24 hours a frame. Now, that's just not like a couple of factors difference. It's just like an astronomical sort of chasm of difference. I mean, think about that for a second, right? Like, how many frames do you generate in 24 hours if you're generating them at 50, one per 50, milliseconds apiece? I mean, it's mind-numbing. So while we've got this really great high end, and we've got obviously other things that happen at the television and episodic end, the real-time stuff seems to be so good and yet is like a star ride away from what's happening in the feature film stuff.
It is, and it also depends what platform you're running it on too, doesn't it? If you've got this computing power, you're better off than you are possibly on mobile.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, the Epic thing was running on a tricked up games machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it bloody well should, because it was amazing, their Kite demo. And full credit to Epic for producing something so cinematic. But if you took all that compute power and put it on a cloud, then you don't need the localized power to do it. Anyway, you can get Netflix streamed down, you could get this streamed down. But still, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter how much compute power you have right now, trying to get 24 hours in 50 milliseconds is pretty
not right now.
Well.
Yeah.
And it's not just that, right? It's like the big visual effects stuff is a combination of live action and so it's rendered in real time, but it's rendered in real time without live actors in it. The film guys are rendering with live actors in it. So again, there are all these sort of issues that, you know, if you can render in real time but you can't change the camera or any of the lighting because it contains live action, what's the advantage of having it rendered in real time?
And that actually brings up another interesting point, which is people still love their movie stars, you know, and I'm not saying we won't end up seeing a lot of digitally created movie stars because it's already happening. But look at Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation. I just thought people flocked to that film because they just still love Tom Cruise. He did all these great stunts. The film's quite good. But I think people still have this affection for him, you know, and other film stars as well, that you're not necessarily going to get in these VR experiences or not.
In the new coming Star Wars films, how enthusiastic are you to see Mark Hamill?
Very enthusiastic.
Okay, so why hasn't Mark been such a big star as, say, Harrison between films, between the Star Wars? I mean, he's done stuff, right? Like, he was in, what was that one, the Gentleman Assassin thing from England, the recent one where they're all tailored and...
Kingsman.
Kingsman, yeah.
He was only in that briefly, but...
Well, still, but he was in... It's not like he hasn't done anything. He's done stuff in games as well, but he just hasn't done anything near...
No, but, you know, but I would say Harrison Ford is a much better actor. I don't think Mark Hamill's a terrible actor, but Harrison Ford is leaps and bounds more charismatic and, you know, obviously got cast in big films.
But I'm really looking forward to seeing Mark Hamill in Star Wars. I mean, I almost more than I am Harrison Ford, quite frankly.
Mark Hamill has sort of acquired this cult status, though, I think, in the last 10 years by sort of making fun of his time on Star Wars, by appearing on The Family Guy, on Simpsons, on... You know, he's in a lot of voiceovers as in cartoons. He's the voice of the Joker. I think he's sort of acquired this status more recently. I mean, he had the status in the 80s after the films, but he didn't have any big film roles. So I think that people are really... He's very likable. I don't know whether that's the reason why you might be really interested in seeing him. He sort of acquired this likable status.
Yeah.
No?
I don't know. I just am looking forward to seeing him, though. But anyway, we'll see what happens. But yeah. So anything else happening? Movies coming up? Stuff that's... we got, I guess, Agent 47 coming out pretty soon, like this week, I think.
Yep, Hitman Agent 47. That's a film with a lot of visual effects in it. ILM's
major game crossover.
Yeah, ILM's big vendor on that one. It's a little bit quiet, I think, until November when Spectre comes out, and then there's a few more animated films.
Spectre.
Yeah, Bond.
Bond.
And then, you know, December pretty much is Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. But before we get there, there's still Mockingjay Part 2.
Ah, that'd be huge.
Yeah, The Martian. And, you know, most people, I mean, I think they know about The Good Dinosaur, but it's the shortest, you know, time period between Pixar films. And I'm actually really looking forward to it. I don't know too much about it. Haven't watched a lot of stuff about The Good Dinosaur, but I'm keen to see it. And then, obviously, Star Wars is just before Christmas, so that will be huge.
Yeah, I don't want to be in the way of that behemoth coming down through the ridges.
No, I think a lot of films have moved, basically, because of Star Wars.
Yeah.
The one film we didn't talk about, which was shown at D23, was Jungle Book. So this is the remake of the film in live action. The director is, I'm totally blanking on his name. It's the director of Iron Man.
Iron Man 1, yes. Also Chef.
Yes, Chef. John.
Getting close.
Oh, this is embarrassing.
This is what I do. You never do this. I'm really enjoying this.
Anyway, the visual effects supervisor is Rob Legato, and NPC is the main house. And apparently, I mean, I've not seen anything, but it got a standing ovation. When the Jon Favreau film...
I knew you'd finally Google it.
...was shown like a clip, and apparently it wasn't even a final clip. It was some, you know, it will probably work in progress. So that's out next year, and I, you know, I think it's getting sort of Life of Pi type buzz. So should be good.
I can't comment.
Oh, okay. The only other thing I wanted to mention was this game that I saw a little bit about a while ago called Guitar Hero Live. So Guitar Hero is huge, was huge.
Do we not think this is going to be the game film version like Halo, right?
What do you mean, like Halo?
Well, the film Halo, the memorable film Halo, the film that you adore and love and watch over and over again, Halo.
I'm not following.
Well... So, Guitar Hero, right?
Yeah.
Works as a game, doesn't work not as a game.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it might not work as
a game. Well, this is an interesting concept. So, Guitar Hero Live is still a game, and you play the guitar in front of a live audience who, if you don't play well, start booing at you. If you play well, they go bananas.
Oh, hang on. I thought this was a film.
No. This is a game.
Oh, this is another game.
Yeah, right. So,
well, there you go. I'm completely blown. So, I thought that Guitar Hero Live was an actual... You were saying that it was a film.
No.
Okay.
The reason why I'm bringing it up is because Framestore is the effects house behind all the live-action sequences. So, what I heard was...
But they're just recorded, right? They're not...
So what they've done apparently is they've recorded live action sequences in front of a crowd, then the crowd's been extended, and to enable transitions. So say you're playing badly, the crowd will be booing you, but then you start playing better. Well, they transition without any sort of seams into.
How can they do that if it's live action? I mean, I understand if it's a massive crowd.
Well. This is why I'm really curious to see it. I don't know too many details, except that I understand they shot it with a robotic camera, motion control, and then they possibly have, you know, not cutaways, but the camera drifts maybe to the band that you're playing with and then goes back to the audience.
No, I got to find out about this because yeah. I completely didn't pay any attention. I thought this was like Halo the film, and I was thinking, well, I don't care about that.
It just sounds fascinating, partly because I think there's just apparently hours and hours and hours of compositing involved because of all the different songs and the different scenarios.
So everyone headbangs to the right beat.
Exactly. Okay. So, I mean, I think it comes out in October. And, I'm just waiting to see that because I'm curious about how this sort of visual effects work has been placed into a game. Anyway, so that's, a month away.
Sure. Well, I need to find out more about this. Is it got a good songs in it? Like, is it like a good... I mean, is it a particular genre? Is it like metal or... We can have like tons of Judas Priest and Metallica or something? Or is it going to be like... I mean, it's not going to be techno, right? Because there's like no guitaring.
Well, I've no idea. I mean, I think the Guitar Hero, the original, had, modern songs that everyone loved.
I wanted to have like War on Drugs and like indie bands in there, right? Like Green Day. And
well...
I'm aging here, but anyway, I mean, I'm less keen on Megadeth and Anthrax and I mean, I hate to break it to you, Ian. I'm just not a big metal fan. I know you thought that I was. I know you're sitting there thinking, Mike, that comes as a shock to me, knowing you as you do. But I'm not really. I'm not really into...
Well, how much do you want to bet that you buy the game and then you can buy add-ons for your own types of songs or whatever else?
So you'll be buying the Alicia Keys pack or the Megadeth pack?
I'm not sure if they have Icelandic, bands like Sigur Rós, which are my favourite sort of bands on there. But, yeah. Okay. Yeah, anyway, so that's sort of a different sort of visual effects project that I'm interested in covering and looking for.
Well, dear listener, who obviously is a member of Insider, or you wouldn't be able to listen to this, we want to thank you so much for your support with Insider. What we've been trying to do since we've been discussing this actually on this intermittent Insider podcast is give you more Insider stories. So there's a good Insider story up there now on previewing Mission Impossible, which again is not so much, hopefully why you support us with Insider, but our way of saying thank you for doing it. And that's with the third floor. As I said, I spoke to Chris in LA for FX PhD, but this is quite separate. This is about third floor, I think London, wasn't it, that did the work for third floor, anyway, for Mission Impossible. And what we're trying to do is every week or two basically come out with another one of these good Insider stories for you. So another one coming out next week, and so it goes. I'm not saying we'll do it absolutely every week, but we're certainly trying to ramp up the amount to make it, basically a bit more frequent than it has been, because we do really appreciate the support of Insider members. So as you know, our infrequent chat, Ian and I like to look at the film, so we will, reconvene after... Agent 47 or whatever,
yeah.
and see where we're at. But and also, if there are any topics you'd like discussed or any things that you'd like us to banter about, this is obviously a fairly casual, sort of irregular but heartfelt recording. Just let us know. Just email us. Obviously, on Twitter, you can hit us as well. I'm Mike Seymour. You are
VFX Blog.
VFX Blog. And we will see you around. And also, by the way, thanks to all the people that came up and said hi at SIDGRAPH. We really, really appreciate it, including the guy who liked seeing me in the flesh so much that he spontaneously hugged me. I really appreciate that. It was really kind, really sweet. Okay, guys, thanks so much. See you in.
Thanks.